Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're just wrapping up the Secrets to High Yield Fields workshop right here at the Ag PhD Field Day site in the Morton Center, safely inside the Morton Center. I think it started off today at 10 below zero outside, so that sounds pretty harsh to people that aren't used to those kind of cold temperatures, but it actually wasn't bad. The roads are good. Ice doesn't even stick to the roads when it gets cold enough, so it was a nice day for travel and a great day to be inside talking with other farmers about what's it going to take to move some of these fields up to a higher yield level.
All right, so if you are with us today in our live audience, if you've got a question, just raise your hand up high and we'll have somebody come around to you with a microphone. And if you could, please give us your first name and at least the state that you're from. We would really appreciate that. I know I've talked to people today from all over the country already. It's been fantastic. We really, really appreciate you being here. Let's get to our first question right now.
Hi, I'm Ryan from Kansas. Primarily, we're using anhydrous for our nitrogen on corn.
Yep.
Trying to think about ways to change how we apply it and where we place it.
Did you get any anhydrous on last fall?
No, we never do it in the fall.
Okay.
Long story, but anyway.
I think the guys trying to do it in the fall didn't get it done either last year.
Not much. How close, if you're putting anhydrous on 4 inches deep, how far away from the row would you be?
How many units of nitrogen are you putting on?
120 to 160, depending on the field.
Okay. So our concern, obviously, is being too close to that seed. I don't know that there's any set figure. It's going to vary depending on soil type, depending on rainfall, depending on heat. So a lot of factors there. Let's just put it this way. If I'm going to be at 4 inches, I'm going to plant my seed at 2 inches. If I was right under the row, that's only 2 inches away, and with the vapors coming off that anhydrous, there's no way I would do that. So if it's me, I'm probably going to be at least 2 inches over and maybe even more than that.
Yeah, why not be a safer distance? I mean, it's going to move around in the soil a little bit water is in the soil, too.
It's going to move around, and also roots take the path of least resistance. So what we found, even in our strip till, when we first started strip tilling, we did a bunch of studies on that. So we're placing fertilizer 8 to 10 inches deep, and we did some studies even directly in between 30-inch rows. So in other words, it's 15 inches away. Dug root pits in the summer, and sure enough, the roots had grown there because we had basically no compaction because we'd done strip till, then we planted, and then the roots found that. So what we're trying to say is we would be a little further over than maybe the average guy. I'd be at least 2 inches away, but to be on the safe side, I'm probably 4 or 6 inches away. All right, so again, if you've got a question, just raise your hand. We'll come around to you with the microphone and get your question. Darren, what'd you think today? So we had a whole bunch of data. Was there anything in particular that really stood out to you? What was the most interesting thing?
Well, honestly, if we can take plant tissue tests and soil tests and tie those to yield on the same spot, that's pretty powerful. Yep. And when we asked a room full of hundreds of farmers how many are doing this right now, there was one. Now, there's one that I talked to as well that said,
He did it on one field.
One that's doing it with plant tissue analysis to yield, and there was another guy that was doing it on soil test analysis to yield.
Yep.
And when I talk to these guys, it's like, well, there gets to be a lot of data, and you got to sort through a lot of things, and I get it. But with today's technology that we've got, digging through some of that data is becoming easier, and it's becoming a faster process to gather the data. We've got so much data on our farms. If we could analyze it a little better, that's pretty powerful.
Absolutely. Let's get to the next question.
Dan from Nebraska. On the ground, take a soil test, 5.5. Your choices are either...
Wait, 5.5 pH?
pH.
Yeah, okay.
Choices are Pell Lime from the co-op or byproduct from the corn plant, which probably won't be active for a year or two. Would you stick with the Pell Lime or maybe even a combination?
If those are my only two choices, and I don't know, you know, your ECCE for either one of them, I'm just going by the information you just gave me. It sounds to me like I'm probably going to use a combination. And the reason why is because typically Pell Lime is relatively expensive.
It acts quickly. It costs a little bit more money. It may not have quite as much of a tail as larger volume of an ag lime type source.
Right. But at 5.5, we don't have to get super carried away either. We were showing that today, too, in terms of correlation to yield. And if we're talking corn is our number one crop, let's just say, well, you got guys like Hula, David Hula out there who says, you know, 6.3, that's pretty darn good pH. And we would tell you, 6.3 is probably what I'm shooting for. So if I've got light to medium soil texture, it's not going to take all that much lime to get me there. So I'm not that far away. Now, here's my other thing. When you say 5.5 pH, I want to know, is it actually 5.8 or 5.5 in all the areas that I'm going to spread? So one of the things we were showing yesterday, I know, is that we had taken some big grids, and then we took some smaller grids and realized, ooh, in that what we thought was 5.5, we have a range in there. So I guess that's our number one thing anymore that we're probably going to be talking about with lime is don't overdo it, because we overdid it on our farm, and that ended up costing us yield and costing us more money in terms of extra lime application.
Just
make sure your grid or zone is small enough.
The other thing with these lime sources, it's interesting to me that sometimes there's more sources than we're aware of, and it may be a source that people haven't used. I was talking to a farmer at one of our meetings earlier this winter, and he said, yeah, you know what, you got talking about the water treatment plant lime, and I talked to our water treatment plant. Well, they had it. They had water treatment plant lime, and nobody was spreading it. Well, they didn't even realize that they had a valuable commodity, so they weren't telling anybody. And he said, as soon as I asked about it, they're like, well, you want this? He's like, well, I don't know. I mean, if you want to get rid of it. And they're like, well, yeah, you can just have it. And he goes, please stop talking about that water treatment plant lime. I got this great deal worked out right now. Well, if they got to get rid of it and they're willing to give it away, they'll give it away. And you're better off if multiple people are using it, so you actually get the product out, get it spread, have, you know, somebody that can buy the equipment, because unless you're putting it on a ton of acres every year, you just can't afford all the equipment.
Yeah, and the big things we're looking for, low cost, but then we want to have a really fine material that doesn't have a whole bunch of heavy metals in it. But yeah, that fine material, that's the real key.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, we're broadcasting with a live audience here taking questions. We'll be right back after this.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow Smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting live following an Ag PhD Secrets of High Yield Fields workshop. It was really fun today talking about some of the factors in yield and looking at some different fields and tests and what's really driving yield on different farms. Let's take another question back here.
Yep.
Hi, my name is Lars from Colton. You guys know me pretty well. I have two questions. One is that I'm a first-time farmer. So then you say look at your statistics last year.
Yep.
Or if you last year you had a wet year. You wish you could have 2012. So you can kind of compare.
Well,
we don't wish for 2012. Yeah. We just want to compare the data from 2012. Yep.
So what would you say to me, though, that don't have that? Because I just started farming right now. I don't have that. And then my second question quick is, which one's a better fertilizer, cow manure or hog manure?
Okay. Well, there's different analysis in each of those, and there's also some challenges. Now, if you look at liquid dairy manure we were talking about today that we put on some of these plots here at the field day site, well, you've got a liquid, and we can knife it in with liquid hog manure. We can knife it in with dry cattle manure. We're spreading it across the top and doing tillage and that kind of thing. So there's a couple different things that come into play there. But for the most part, we're looking at the nutrient analysis and seeing how that balances out with what we need. And unfortunately, we don't really have a lot of choices here. We don't have the choice of, well, hey, you got 10 different manure sources. Which would you prefer? For us, we've got a dairy that's close to our farm. And so that's our choice. And we actually got a little bit of chicken litter that we got hauled in from a ways off. But
yeah, we're getting other choices. But the whole thing is it just depends on which nutrients you need and what's the analysis look like. So we want to look at the positive things, but we also want to make sure that we're being careful about sodium and salt. Because if you overdo it at any point, you're going to really hurt your soil or you're going to kill that crop. I know even on our farm, I just remember in this field out here, there was one year where we had a little area that drowned out or something. We thought, oh, well, no big deal. We'll just go spread some manure there. So we put a bunch of manure there. Well, what do you think happened the next spring? The crop comes up and it looks horrible and the yield was terrible. We had overdone it on salt. So anyway, when we talk about you don't have, go to the next question, when you don't have data right now, you want to try getting at least what data you can. So I just pulled up on the screen how to read a soil test. You want to at least go out, test the soil, and go from there. It also wouldn't hurt if you talked to the previous whoever farmed that ground before, and then just talk to other successful farmers in your area. Just like, we talk about it all the time at the Ag PhD Field Day. We bring in super successful farmers from around the country and around the world, just get lessons from them. I mean, that's what a lot of our workshops are about. We're trying to learn as much as we can from guys who are doing well and then share that with other people out there. So,
well, the other thing too I'd say is you don't have to have this big backlog of data over the last 10 years, because honestly, most farmers don't have that. They can tell you what their yields were, but they don't necessarily know, well, what were your plant tissue levels on this nutrient? I don't know. Never pulled the test.
Yeah, but let's talk about the guys that do know that stuff. Does David Hewlett know it? You bet he does. Does Randy Dowdy? You bet he does. How about Francis Childs? He was the first guy raising over 400 bushel corn. Did he have all his data? You bet. How about Herman Warsaw 50 years ago? He had whatever data he could get back then in those days. But the point is, you know, all these farmers, they're super passionate about it, and they're spending lots of time in the field and with the data. All right, let's go to the next question.
Brian, Darren, Greg from Northeast South Dakota. First of all, just want to thank you guys for putting this on. I mean, I come here every year, and I'm impressed with how you've led the way through the tiling thing, and now you're leading the way through the yield analysis, always coming up with new ideas for us. And I'm just thankful to be a farmer in the 21st century here in South Dakota.
Oh, it's so much easier than a century ago, that's for sure.
Yes. So a thought I have, when we're doing all this work to up our potassium, we're doing all this, if we do 1 acre soil sampling and then we're doing variable rate work, the thing that bothers me when I see a guy do all this work and he goes out to spread this potassium and other things and he does it on a 30 mile an hour wind day. And yeah, what is potassium? It's half rock that's indissolvable and it's half dust.
Yep.
So when you're in a big wind, what happens? The dust is gone. And so I just say, think about when you're doing that. My requirement for spreading K, and especially, is it's got to be like a spray day, 10 mile an hour wind. So think about that. You do all this work, and then it blows away in the wind.
Yep, we agree with you. Unless, of course, it's your neighbor and the wind's blowing toward you, then, we want you
spread it today. No, I know it. And there's so many things in farming that we may be doing the right things, but our timing's off. or we're just pushing it. And we were kind of joking about it earlier. Hey, if it's going to rain on Friday, how fast are you running the planter? You know, well, can we run a little faster? Can we push a little harder? Well, this is the most important job all year on the farm, and it's determining our yield, and we're going to rush through it because we got a storm coming. You know, who knows? And maybe it's the right move to do that because then it's going to rain for 20 days and you don't get back out there. I don't know. That's the risk that you take.
Also, you just made the comment about being appreciative that we get to farm in this day and age.
Oh, thank goodness. Just, I thought you were going to latch onto the tiling comment. I was like, no, don't say that.
We only have an hour show, Darren. But anyway, our great-grandpa farmed just a mile north of here. That was his home farm. And you just think about, well, he used to do that with, horses, you know? I mean, just think of all the manual labor. And I've got pictures of, you know, some stuff from 50, 60-plus years ago. There's a lot of manual labor going on. And today, we're complaining because the air conditioning goes out in our fancy tractor that's got auto steer that we aren't even driving as we're going through the field.
Yep, or our GPS is down today.
Right. So anyway, yeah, it's just amazing how we've been able to advance. But you also mentioned, you know, like the variable rate and that type of thing. Darren and I were over in Ukraine in 2006, and they've got great big farms, 10,000 hectares. That's 25,000 acres, 25,000-acre farms that they're farming all one way. Okay, and then we're doing
the same thing on every acre.
Same thing on every acre. And we've got in even 40 acres, I want to change what I'm doing there, and I'm getting yield response because of that. And not only the yield response, but we talk to people all around the United States and all around the world who want farmers to be good environmental stewards. Well, we are, especially when we're putting nutrients where we need them and not putting them where we don't. So it saves us money as farmers, and then it's also a good thing for the land and the environment. All right, let's go to our next question. Yep, we got it right here.
Hi, this is Randy from Malcolm, Nebraska. I know this is a pretty open-ended question, but what do you see as the biggest issues facing us farmers for the upcoming year?
Well, number one is profitability, of course. You know, it's not easy to make a profit, and this year is going to be a challenge, and there's a lot of things out of our control. So what we do try to focus on is what can we control. And I would say, you know, some of the big challenges going into this year are a lot of fertility work, a lot of soil prep work last fall did not get done. And quite a few guys that I talk to say, yeah, I may have left some ruts out in the field last fall. Did you get them fixed? Well, no. I barely got the crop out before it froze up. And here we go with a nice blanket of white. And it seems like you guys in Nebraska have had your share of white this year, too. So what's it going to be like this spring for soil conditions to get out there and get that stuff fixed? And then, you know, whenever we've got to change programs, like maybe you've got a fall fertility program and you've got heavy ground, if you get a switch to a spring fertility program, you're not going to do exactly the same thing. And so we're talking to a lot of guys about that of, hey, I need to switch my program up a little bit. Maybe I'll go with some more liquid. I'll do it closer either in row or in a 2x2 or 2x2 in each side of the row, something to feed that crop more than my broadcast dry fertilizer program that I normally would use. And I know we had a question earlier from somebody not too far from you that talked about anhydrous. And I know we had a question from Kansas about anhydrous. And yeah, are you going to do anhydrous in the spring, or is that not a good thing for you? I don't know. A lot of changes this year.
As soon as you brought up your question and Darren started it, I thought exactly the right way. There are a lot of things out of our control. And here's the problem. We as farmers are prone to worry. And I often bring this up. If you read the Bible and what it says in there, it says don't worry about anything. That doesn't mean don't worry only when the crop price is good or only when I'm making tons of money. No, it's don't worry about those kind of things. Let's just focus on what we can control and do a good job on the farms. We talked a lot today about fertility, but certainly there are resistant weeds, there are insects, there are diseases. We can manage a lot of those things, but it starts right now.
And we'll talk through some of those things you can control on your farm on today's Ag PhD radio program. Stay tuned.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
white mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Ag PhD Field Day site here safely inside the Morton Center. It's actually pretty nice out today. It's a real nice February day. Just following the Ag PhD Secrets to High Yield Fields workshop and getting a lot of questions about, well, what are you doing to push the yield levels on your farm? What are other guys doing around the country and really around the world? That's been a fun discussion and some nutrients that we normally don't talk about.
All right. Well, oh, that was my lead in there. Yeah. I think we're ready for the next question.
Okay, let's take the next question.
Yeah.
Then.
Okay. Yep, go ahead.
Hey, Jeff Flachinski from Thorpe, Wisconsin. First time out here.
Awesome. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having it.
You bet.
Just kind of curious what you guys feel is the easiest and quickest way to build fertility deep in the soil.
Well, deep fertility is kind of interesting. So we talked today and we showed some soil samples about not just the top 6 inches, but the next 6 inches, the next 6 inches, the next 6 inches, not just the top foot, but let's look at the next foot down as well. And I think you're onto something there, that we focus on this top bit, little bit of soil, and honestly, most of our nutrients are in the top 3 inches. What if we get that fertility down deeper? We've done a lot of different things on our farm. When we talk about manure application, we try to inject it as deep as we can. When we look at building up P and K levels, stuff that in our heavy soils doesn't leach out or move down with rainfall, we're dropping them in oftentimes 10 inches down with our strip-till rig. That's been a nice way to get that next foot busy, you know, with nutrients. The other thing is just getting roots to go down deeper. If we can deal with whatever compaction layers we've got up top and let more root growth push down through our soil, now we've got oxygen down there, we've got food down there for soil microbes, and we can start building things there as well.
Okay, here's my answer. What I would do, if I've got liquid manure, I'm going to get a deep injector. We've injected liquid manure as deep as 20 inches deep before. So you can do that with a deep till machine if you want to. In strip till, I'd just be pushing it down as deep as I can possibly get. So that could be liquid or dry. Otherwise, if you've got dry manure, dry fertilizer, there's just not a real great way
other than deep tillage. What do you have for fertility you're putting on your farm? Do you use manure or are you using mostly commercial fertilizer?
Commercial fertilizer.
Yep. So with commercial fertilizer, if it's dry, you're about stuck to either strip till, so deep inject that way. Otherwise, if you're out broadcasting, then your only other choice is deep tillage. So,
yep. Are you using cover crops at all in your rotation?
They freeze off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it gets too late. Depending on your rotation.
People want to talk about cover crops, but it's not like we're seeing, really high soil test levels deep down in the ground because somebody raised cover crops. There are a few nutrients there, but not a tremendous amount. So you've got to put nutrients down if they're going to get down. When we start talking about some of these immobile nutrients like phosphorus, zinc, even, potassium in a lot of soils, it just doesn't move much at all. So, yeah, it's unless you physically place it there, I don't know how you're going to get it down. So, yep, either got to do deep tillage or physically place it down deep in the soil. All right, let's go to the next question over here.
Hey, guys, Adam from North Dakota. My question is about fertilizer up front in spring wheat.
Yep.
We use a shank type drill on 12-inch spacing, and we put all our fertilizer down with the seed, anhydrous, and then some dry starter.
Okay.
And I'm finding that for the yields we're getting, I'm struggling to get it all down at the same time. It's starting to be too much of a requirement to really feel safe about putting it with the seed.
Oh, yeah, just worried about seed
totally
injury.
Totally get that.
Okay, all right.
So I'm wondering, I have the option of banding it with a separate disc machine on 7.5-inch spacing or else broadcasting. And there's some micronutrients I'd like to put down too. So I'm wondering kind of what things I should be considering in that scenario.
Yeah. So first, let me just ask you too. Do you rent this ground or do you own the ground?
This is own ground.
Yeah. Okay.
Awesome.
If we own the ground, then I'm a lot less worried about how we place it there, because eventually we should be able to get those nutrients. So the whole thing is when we start talking about banding, a lot of times we're talking about row crops. When we're 30-inch rows and the row doesn't get filled in till really late in the year with our roots, then we've got a much better chance for uptake and utilization this year that way. But when you're in a
12-inch row with a crop with the kind of populations you're going to put out there for small grains, it's not as big a deal.
Nope.
You can do a lot better job gathering it. And also with nitrogen, for sure you're going to grab that stuff. Where you're at, it's not going to be a concern. So
right. To
me, I look at delaying some of that nitrogen application using a stream bar. That would be my solution. Just pushing some of that back. Looking at what the world record wheat and barley growers are doing, they just aren't loading up much on the end to start with. They're saving it for later. Now, they're doing a totally different management system than we are, trying to get more tillers and using plant growth regulators to control the height of the crop and those kinds of things. But, to get to 100 bushel wheat, are you at 100 bushel yet or not quite yet?
No, we're around 70 to 80 at the top end.
Okay, which is good. But you can get to 100 doing things how you're doing it, just tweaking things a little bit. And that would be one thing I'd say is saving some of that end, putting on a little bit later.
Yep, okay. Then on the phosphorus side, this is assuming since you're from North Dakota, you've got high pH. If you have IPH, that's where the banding does seem to pay. We have a little bit less tie-up when we band as opposed to when we just go ahead and broadcast it. So what I'm saying is you might spend $30 on phosphorus one way. You might have to spend $40 in a band. You might have to spend $40 on broadcast to get the same response. Eventually, maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the road, it'll come back for you. That's a long time. So I pulled this chart up on the screen, but when we get higher pH, that's where we have more tie up of nutrients like phosphorus, for example. So that would be the one nutrient that I would say, yep, there's probably a slight advantage to doing this banding thing like you're talking about. But otherwise, broadcast, band, it's not going to make a lot of difference with many of the other nutrients. Your nitrogen, sulfur, some of the most important nutrients you're going to put out there, it's not going to help you a lot one way or the other. Even potassium, it's not as big a deal. So phosphorus would be the only one where I'm really saying, yeah, I'd probably look at the band. Otherwise, if it's simpler and easier for you, you just broadcast it and have it over with. So quite frankly, that's probably what I'm looking at.
You can go with lower salt liquids and do that closer to that seed as well. That would be another way
to save some things up. You're still going to be limited at some point in how much you can do, and that's kind of where he's going. As his yields go higher and higher, eventually he's going to run out of – the ability to put it all right with that seed, and I totally get that. So what I'd probably do, I probably would be broadcasting, but you could certainly run out there with that other machine and band. All right?
Thanks. Thanks. Let's take another question over here.
Yes, I'm Lyle from Nebraska, and last spring we were strip-tilling a couple fields, and I was putting on about 180 pounds, 11.52-0, and maybe 200 pounds of potash. The pH of the soil was 6.3, 6.4, but my agronomist wanted me to put Pell Lime with that fertilizer recipe to neutralize the acidity of my recipe.
Wow.
Is that was that necessary? I didn't know if I needed to raise my pH, but he wanted me to have a recipe.
No, I think you're just at the optimum pH right there.
You are. How much Pell Lime? Do you remember?
I don't recall how much Pell Lime he wanted me to put. He just wanted me to put some in to kind of neutralize the recipe.
Yeah. That's possible. I mean, I don't have a real big argument with that if we were talking just a few pounds. But we don't want to get real carried away. There's no real need for that. The other thing, when you talk about your pH and what is your pH, I just pulled this up on the screen too. If we're looking at stuff that's deep down in the ground, if let's say we just soil tested right in that range of where you're going to put your strip till stuff, maybe down there the pH is a little bit lower. So what I've got up on the screen here, we did some testing years ago with strip till, for example, and you can see our pH was pretty good in the top few inches. We were 7.2, 6.6, something like that. Once you got down to a 6 to 7 inch depth, we were at a 5 pH. We were at a 5 pH. Okay, so if you look at that, I've also got data here from conventional till, no-till. So what does that tell you? If we're putting a lot of fertilizer down at that same kind of depth year after year after year, eventually we really can get that pH down, in part because of the fertility and in part because we've got a lot of root growth down there. So you might be looking at, hey, let's just take this area and see how our pH is. But my guess is he's looking at one or both of those things. If it's a small amount of Pell Lime, I don't have any issue with it.
We'll be right back with more questions after this. Stay tuned.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side, so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Center here at the Ag PhD Field Day site. Just wrapping up the Ag PhD Secrets to High Yield Fields workshop. Let's take another question.
Oh, we're going over there. Yep.
Okay.
Hey guys, David from Minnesota. When you're putting on multiple nutrients like zinc sulfate, magnesium sulfate, copper sulfate, how do you know which one is helping you out there?
Well, that's a great question. When you're doing multiple things at the same time, it's pretty hard to know exactly. One thing you could look at is plant tissue analysis, and we showed some analysis that we did after making applications like that each week just to see what's getting into the plant. And you may notice, oh, wow, I really got the manganese in. Maybe that's making a difference for me, or maybe I got the zinc in or something like that. The other thing I thought you were going to go with is, wow, you're doing manganese sulfate, zinc sulfate, copper sulfate. How much sulfur is enough? And I think that's kind of funny because those forms of nutrients are important. And sometimes, yeah, we like those sulfate forms. And when you're putting together your fertility program, make sure you add those up. If, hey, I'm getting a couple pounds here and a couple pounds there, it all adds up in the program.
Here's the other thing. We can talk about yield this year, but then we got to talk about yield next year and going forward. Because like we showed today, there were some things where we put out there and they weren't available right away year one, and maybe they aren't available at all year one. So we got to weigh all those things in. And how do we know if we're doing three things? It's almost impossible, other than, like, to Darren's point, yep, you can run tissue analysis, see what got in the plant, see what your levels are, but that's why commonly we'll do research on just one thing here, just one thing there, just one thing there, and see what's impacting our yield. But, you know, the other thing you got to weigh into this is at any point in your crop, one thing is going to be the yield limiting factor. Once you've eliminated that, now you got to find the next thing, then you got to find the next thing.
Yeah, and the other fun thing that you could do too is maybe you start in the middle of the field and you just say, okay, I'm only putting one of those three things in. Make one pass. When it comes time for the second pass, now you put the second one in, and then you put the third one in on the next pass. And at least you've got, okay, here's just one alone, here's a combination of two, here's a combination of all three, and then you can do the rest of the field with all three and hope that is the best treatment. But, you know, I would venture to guess if you had those three nutrients, some parts of the field, one nutrient will be the difference maker. Other parts of the field, it may be a different one. We sure see variability in our fields, and there's some areas where I'd say, yeah, we don't need any more copper over there. We don't need any more zinc over there, but we maybe need that other nutrient. So maybe that was why three were mixed together. I don't know, but I think it's going to vary as you go across your farm.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's take another question over here.
Okay. Rick from South Dakota. So, on our soil tests, we have quite a few of our soils are like 0.8, 0.9 in boron, yep, where it should be like 1.5 or in that neck of the woods. What is the best way to put on that boron?
Well, the cheapest way is to go out with a dry boron, and that's what we were talking about here a little bit earlier, where we did it in the spring. It doesn't look to me like it got into the tissue, but by the following fall, we had raised our levels. So if you're very deficient, like we are in some cases, then we're doing the dry, and then we're also doing some liquid, either foliar feeding, at plant. We've done some liquid even mixed in with our broadcast herbicide pre-emerge. So we've done that before. But the fastest way to get it into the plant is doing some foliar feeding. It's just, you know, if you're going to do a little bit, that's fine. The problem is if you say, boy, I'm just ridiculously deficient, that's where we go, okay, I mean, I could really burn the crop if I wanted to put that much on, and it's going to cost a lot of money. So that's where we're doing a little bit of each right now. Very often we talk about, we use dry fertilizer to raise our soil tests. We use liquid to feed the crop in the meantime. So year one, I'm probably going to do a little bit of each. And then eventually I'm going to hope that I raise my soil tests enough that that takes over and I don't have to be throwing a bunch of foliar stuff on moving forward. Also, we are using all the time a very low rate of liquid stuff, even right in furrow, that's got a tiny, tiny, tiny amount of boron, so and a bunch of other nutrients. So we know that in cold soils, it's hard for almost any nutrient to be available. So we're throwing that in just because of our geography. You know, we're in a cold area of the country. Go ahead.
If you wanted to build up your boron in your soils,
yep,
and just put boron, can you? With dry?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
absolutely.
We have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had that right in our book.
So here's,
the
thing,
Newbor,
Rick.
We
were all excited about putting higher rates of boron out there, especially Brian was really excited about that. And I said, you know, the best place to do that would be on some of your ground, Brian. Let's try that. Let's try putting out 3 pounds or 5 pounds of boron and just see what happens. Brian's like, yeah, let's do it. He was all in. And I was thinking, man, if he kills the crop, at least it's on his part of the farm.
First
unfortunately,
that,
it turned out to be like some of the highest yielding stuff we had. So
it
then,
was the highest.
Then it's like, ooh, I want that too.
Yep. So anyway, what we had, like in my program here on corn, I had 30 pounds per acre of 15% Newbor. That's 4.5 pounds of actual boron. We can't recommend that to everybody. We got to be careful about the soil type, how much calcium
you
have.
No, we won't recommend that to anybody. But if you want to try a high rate of boron, go for it on your own.
Yep. But, yes, there are dry products, and, yes, there are fertilizer spreaders that can spread that low a rate. You know, 30 pounds isn't much. You've got to make sure you got a spreader that can do that. And also, you know, with a lot of these spreaders now, even for ours on our farm, we have it set up so we can do variable rates. So if there were just certain areas we needed to put it, we can just put it there. All right?
Yep, and we kind of stair-stepped our way up to that. We didn't just get there overnight, but – yeah, we started trying a little bit. Hey, that worked fine. We tried a little more. Hey, that worked fine.
But we are willing to do crazy, dumb stuff learn. So we make the mistake, and then we can tell you, don't do that. That was stupid.
Well,
okay.
We did have a lot of rainfall this year too, Brian. On a dry year, who knows? Maybe
yep.
It'd be different.
All right. Yep, got the next question right here.
I haven't heard anything about anybody concerned about row width. And that's one question there.
For which crop?
Either one.
Corn or beans. Okay.
And I know you're probably 30-inch on both of them here. Some of them will do that. Some places in the hills you put the beans narrower. Mm-hmm. And then the next question is, I see all your test plots are planted on the 5th.
Yep.
And you got so many acres of corn to do and so many acres of beans. What's your planting dates planned for the corn and the beans? And what is your deciding factor that you have to go whether the ground isn't quite where you want it?
Well, I'd say, okay, if I had an ideal year and you said, hey, I can just control the thermostat outside and the rainfall and everything else, I would say I'd want to get my corn in the April 15th window, yep. And I would say I'd want to get my beans in the April 25th window. This has been kind of interesting because there have been guys pushing that bean planting date up, and I know guys that are planting beans at the same time they're planting the corn, and they're really happy. And as soon as they do it for a couple of years, some of those guys are saying, yep, two planters, it's worth it. There's enough yield there. Last year, one of our neighbors close by here, each day they waited to plant beans cost them 2 bushels. Each day they waited to plant corn cost them 2 bushels. And they're like, huh, so I've got one planter, and I'm the guy running it, and I'm giving up either 2 bushels of beans or 2 bushels of corn. I know which one's worth more money. I'm planting the beans first. So there aren't many guys doing that, but that's interesting. You have two planters too? Yeah. So if you've got two people you can put in there that are capable of doing a good job, you may consider doing a little both.
Yeah, but here's the whole thing. Not every year does early planting pay. And so you have to look at the average. We want to look at the average. And I absolutely want to plant the corn first, and then I want to plant the beans. I can get by with that. But last year, we couldn't turn a wheel on our farm till like May 3rd. So we're behind the eight ball on both corn and beans. Now, fortunately, we were running two planters too. But when you ask about row spacing, I'd love to go narrower rows. But the problem with narrower rows is you're going to have more disease problem. And as we build up these fertility levels, we spent most of the time today talking about fertility, right? Well, as we build fertility levels, that usually means the crop's going to get bigger, taller, more lush. And that means we're going to trap more moisture, which is good. But the problem with that is we've got conditions more ripe for disease. So the biggest thing, if you want to go narrow rows in corn or beans, we don't have a huge issue with it. That's fine. But just make absolutely sure you're picking the best disease-tolerant varieties that there are in corn and beans. And then you're probably going to need to spray fungicide in those crops too.
You're right, Brian. There's certainly more to a successful crop than just the fertility plan. We'll talk more about some of these secrets to high-yielding fields coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drift Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro Liquid Fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro Liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
I'm Jesse from Iowa.
Just 1 second. We'll be right back taking more questions here on Ag PhD Radio. We're following.
Jesse was excited, though.
Jesse is fired up, and maybe Jesse wants to just open things up here for us today. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, I would, actually, and I promise I won't talk about no-till today.
Well, that's okay.
My question is about very intensive grid sampling.
Yep.
I was really interested to hear that you guys were doing the entire farm down at one-acre grids.
Yep.
I would like to do that, too. And my question is, are you fairly confident that it's worth the extra effort and cost that you're getting actually a return back in the form of savings because of less lime and micronutrients by removing the variability in your grids?
Yes. Okay, so for us, I am 100% confident that pays off. But I'm not saying we have to do that every year or we have to do that forever. What we're saying is at least once on the farm, do some really small grids. And then let's just see what we've got and we'll work from there. And maybe we can go to bigger grids later, but at least now we've got some good data to manage our farm with. So the other thing is, we want to try to get that done as inexpensively as possible. So going through our app, for example, the AgPhD Soils app, it's going to cost you roughly $5 an acre to do the 5-acre grids. It's going to cost about $17 or $18 to do 1-acre grids. So you're I mean, it's a
it costs more money. There's no doubt about that.
The soil testing is heavily discounted, though, compared to like a normal Midwest Labs test that you would send in. So I'm just trying to say we've got a little volume deal worked out.
All right, so I got a fun story. So I was talking to a gentleman who was here today at the workshop, and he pulled me aside at lunch. And he's like, yeah, you did those 1-acre grids, and I know, you know, with your liming and stuff, that really helped you. He goes, I just thought I'd let you know I did 1/4-acre grids. Like, what? 1/4-acre grids? I said, you must really like taking soil samples. He said, no, I hate it. I hired somebody else to do it. And he said it took him all day to do one field, too, at 1/4-acre grids. But he said, I really wanted to fine-tune where we put that lime because I didn't want to screw stuff up. I was only going to do it once ever. But I just wanted to do it ahead of when we put the lime out there. I don't know if it's worth the 1/4-acre grids, but yeah, definitely getting that grid size down a little smaller is important.
So here's the way I kind of look at it.
We got a follow-up question.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask if technology actually exists to lime down to 1/4-acre grids or so. Is that out there?
I don't know how he was doing it. I didn't follow up with that question with him of how he was getting that spread just right, but...
Yeah, one of the concerns a lot of guys have had is how quick the GPS stuff is going to go. So if you go really fast, it might not catch up quick enough. So you might have to drive a little slower. That would be my guess. But I was just going to say, in terms of justifying this, you go, okay, difference between $5 and let's call it $17, it's $12. $12, I got 3 to 4 bushels of corn. Ever. Not just 1 year, that's ever, if that's the only time I do that. Or at least, you know, over the next, let's say, 4 years. Okay, that's 1 bushel a year. Is it worth 1 bushel a year potentially? Yeah, it is for us because we have really variable land. If your land happens to be very consistent, well, number one, you'd find out real fast and you go, okay, I don't need to do 1-acre grids anymore. 5 or maybe 10 acres is good enough. But for us, you look at our ground. I mean, it's just ridiculously variable, so it is helping us quite a bit. So yeah, I'm really excited about it. All right,
and thanks for the questions.
Where are we at with the next question?
Right over.
Yep, go ahead.
Hey, Jeff from Wisconsin. On our farm, we've had about 5 years in a row with really bad white mold. We're thinking about, you know, going to more of a corn rotation. We were going to use Contans here this spring.
Sure.
With some Cobra.
Okay, using Cobra foliar, you bet.
Yep, and some Endura fungicide. Do you think that is enough to, you know, obviously you're growing pretty high yields.
Yeah, the timing is just really tough on some of those things. Now, let's talk first of all about that Contans. And one of the big things about that product, it has to stay very cool or even frozen. Once it's not frozen or not kept refrigerated at the minimum, you can look on the product label just to see how cold that needs to stay. It starts to degrade, and it degrades pretty quickly. So if you can do that, keep that in good storage condition, that'll help you get more viability out of the product. For us, the sooner that you can get that Contans out, the better. If you get it out there right after harvest and you had white mold, you go right through those white mold areas and spread it, or if you spread it across the whole field, now you've got time for that microbiology to start eating the sclerotia up, and I think that's going to play out for you a little bit too. You know, in terms of in-crop, boy, you look at some of the university trials, Cobra's done just as good as a lot of these fungicides, and it's way cheaper. So why wouldn't you use it? Well, the reason why is a lot of guys don't like to burn their beans. So if you're not scared of that, using 6 ounces or more of Cobra right at the beginning of flowering or just before flowering could be a good thing for you. And Endura is the best fungicide for white mold prevention. The challenge is you've got to cover those little flower blossoms. And as soon as they dry up, that's where you see white mold going in. So if you can protect each one of those, you're in good shape. The problem is soybeans are going to flower from the 21st of June or the 4th of July, whenever they get started, until mid to late August. So you got this wide window that you need to protect, and they just keep putting new blooms on. So there's new areas that are going to need protection. You may need 3 passes of fungicide to do an effective job.
I had 10 things that I listed here, and I've got this up on the screen.
There
now.
You go. I gave you 3 things. Brian's going to say you got to do 10 things.
Well, the point is there's no one thing that's going to totally solve your problem. We had spots where we lost 90 bushels. 90. Okay, doing one thing, it's not going to get me from 0 to 90.
Yeah, the only thing worse than that is Brian running the combine. Then we lose 100%.
All right, so here are my 10 things I'm going to do. I'm
just kidding.
Quick,
I thought he'd jump over that. I thought you'd defend yourself at least, Brian.
We only have 4 minutes left in the show, Darren, so I got to go. One is get your soil manganese levels up. Two is use contents. Three, pick a more tolerant seed variety. Four, wide row spacing. Five, lower planting population. Six, heads-up seed treatment. Seven, cobra right before flowering at a low rate. Eight is fungicide at R1, and you can call it 9 and 10. It would be R3 and then possibly again at R5. And the last thing would be if you have a bad white mold history, like you said, maybe you rotate away from that non-host crop. We've done some of that on our ground, and that obviously dramatically helped.
Yeah, here's the other thing with white mold. We've seen a tie-in with manganese availability.
Yeah, that's number one on the list.
And when you look at that soil pH and the drainage, in our area, a lot of the white mold spots, a lot of the worst spots, are poorly drained high pH spots. Now, that's not always the case, but poorly drained high pH spots are worse. So if we can deal with that issue and wipe that out, we take care of a lot of problems. And we see the same thing with certain weed species and that compete better in those types of environments against our crops. I mean, some of these big soil issues, if we can just fix those, it helps take away a lot of the problems.
Well, you think about that for white mold and really any disease. It needs not only the...
It needs the host, it needs the pathogen there, and then it needs the right environment.
And the environment is an awfully big deal. When we get all those beans, that lush growth, and then it's in low ground already, you walk out there, and even in the middle of the summer, and it's been dry for a month, and you go... The ground's still wet here. Well, chances are we're going to have some white mold or some disease out there. But yeah, talking about these fungicides, Darren said Endura is the best. We've used some Endura, but we've also used this combination of Topsin and Domark, and there are generics out there.
Generic versions there at the bottom.
Yep, there are generics too. There's also Acropolis that's a combination of those two active ingredients that you can buy. But the point is you can put a lot fewer dollars out there, get two modes of action. That's pretty darn good. Might not be quite as good as Endura, but I spent a third the money. So we're maybe using Endura on the first pass, and we'll a lot of times just spot spray that too. You don't necessarily have to do every single acre. You know where your worst stuff is, just like Darren said. A lot of times it's the low ground, that heavy ground, whatever. So go hit those spots, take care of those with Endura, and then spray everything with, you know, this other combination. So we did a lot of that this last year, and it really helped. We had a major problem in 2017. We actually, in my opinion, I thought we had worse conditions in 2018. We should have had more issue, and we had very little issue, really, when it came down to it. Our yields were good, and I was pretty happy with what we ended up doing. But, yeah, that manganese thing, Darren mentioned that because few people mention that.
Huh, you saw our manganese levels today.
But this started a few years ago, and we had a farmer do side-by-side, split a field. He had manganese. He spread manganese on one half. No manganese in the other half, and he was just doing it to try to raise yield and see, okay, what's the difference? What am I going to see? What he saw was where he spread manganese, he had virtually no white mold. Where he put no manganese, he had a whole bunch of white mold. So we were like, whoa, we'd never really heard of that. Well, there is some research out there showing better manganese levels means better white mold tolerance. And in order to get better manganese levels in the plant, too, in addition to putting manganese on, you can try to lower your pH. Usually manganese shows up better that way.
Well, we certainly had a fun couple of days here with a couple back-to-back Ag PhD workshops. Today we were talking secrets of high-yield fields. Really appreciate everybody who came to the workshop today. Really appreciate you for listening to our radio show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.